If you're tired of bad news, if you need some positivity, if you want to support small businesses, then welcome to Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Kaysville's own mayor, Tammy Tran. Here, you'll get to see the best of humanity from within Utah's hidden gem, Kaysville City. Every month, you'll discover small businesses, hear unique and incredible stories, and understand the difference you make in this wonderful city. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so that you'll never miss a chance to find a new business to support and learn what makes a city like this one work as well as it does. So join us as we explore Happy, Grateful, Blessed with Tammy Tran.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Happy, Grateful, Blessed. I'm Tammy Tran. I have a little bit of laryngitis this morning, and so apologies in advance for my scratchy voice. I am here with Ricky Hatch, and I'm so excited to talk to you, Ricky. Ricky Hatch is running for state auditor. You're currently the Weber County auditor.
Correct, yeah.
Am I getting your title correct?
Yeah, okay. Auditor and clerk.
And clerk,
that's
all right.
That's right.
Ricky, please just go ahead and take the microphone and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born to be destined to be a nerd.
A nerd?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I wanted to become an accountant shortly after I learned how to spell accountant.
Really? Was your dad an accountant or your mom?
No, my dad was a school teacher. My mom was an administrative assistant and a stay-at-home mom as well. And I always loved numbers. I was good at math. And had some mentors in my life who were accountants, and I just really kind of liked it. And it's one of those odd stories where you decide early what you want to do, and then you keep doing it, and you still like it.
Followed through.
Which is totally nerdy. I mean, I plan my Thanksgiving dinner on a spreadsheet.
Really, you do?
Yeah, so I know how early to start, and so it's just, I love spreadsheets and data. I love taking gobs of data, massive amounts of data, and making sense out of them. I really like that. I never, ever thought I'd serve in government. In fact, after I got my master's in accounting at BYU, and when professor said, hey, you should come interview for this governmental auditor position. And I said, ooh, I don't want to do that. That sounds really boring. I want to do something exciting. And I worked in private industry for 7 years for PricewaterhouseCoopers. And I worked in Los Angeles for 5 of those years and then went overseas for a couple of years. Came back and, you know, I'd always been passionate about elections and government, how important it was to be involved. And when I came back to the U.S. after a couple years overseas, I worked in Boston for a year, and then my wife and I came out and started a school here, a private school in Utah.
I remember that, actually. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, we loved it, and it was very, it was religious-based, mm-hmm. And it was very civically engaged. Talked a lot about the making of America. We borrowed heavily Clarence Gauzin's philosophy as we taught, and I thought, you know, I'm talking a lot about it. I need to start doing it. I need to start being civically engaged. So I got on my city's planning commission. I didn't even know what it was. I said, how can I help? And I also got involved in the Republican Party. And just really enjoyed serving, and I liked the people. And someone said, you should run for county auditor and clerk. And I said, what do they do? Well, they do auditing and finance and elections. And I said, you can get paid for that? Because that sounds like a dream job. I love it.
Exactly. That's so, what you've been dreaming of since you were a little child, huh?
Yeah. So I've been doing that for 13 years now up in Weber County. And to me, I never thought I'd run for statewide office either. But I like the work that John Dougal has done. And I feel like I've been prepared for this particular moment in this time to take the reins from him and continue and build upon what he's established.
I think it's interesting that you're currently serving as the Weber County auditor and clerk. Davis County, as you know, just separated those two offices.
Yeah.
Do you see a need to do that? I mean,
yeah.
Is it necessary to separate the offices, or do they work just fine together?
I think in large counties, it makes sense.
Okay.
And I suspect Weber County will probably be splitting the office within the next 8 years. The duties don't overlap too much between the two offices. So it is okay to do that split. That does increase the cost of government a little bit. But it's pretty heavy when you're in a large county. It's hard to be intimately involved in everything for both offices. It takes a lot of time.
That makes sense. In terms of being a state auditor, so the jobs, you mentioned elections as well as the accounting side. The state has separated them already, right? Yeah. With the lieutenant governor's office handling the elections?
Correct. They oversee the elections, yeah.
So as a auditor, tell us what an auditor does for those who don't know.
Well, for a state auditor.
For the state auditor.
The Constitution gives the state auditor one task, and that's to audit. To audit the financial statements of the state and the state agencies. And that's really it. And then it tacks on a little footnote that says, and anything else the legislature throws your way. So,
for example, cities.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. And so they, almost everything the state auditor's office does relates to an audit somehow. Starts with it, ends with it, incorporates the principles of transparency. And so really the state auditor is an auditor and should be an auditor. They about two-thirds of that office is focused on auditing the state agencies and making sure the state financial statements are appropriate. And they're basically the external auditor for the state. And then the rest of it deals with transparency, deals with performance audits. There's a fraud hotline, and so they follow up and do investigations into allegations of fraud or waste or abuse, things like that. And they can do performance audits, efficiency audits, compliance audits, making sure programs are functioning the way that they were, that the legislature intended for them to function. But just about everything comes around auditing.
Around auditing and numbers and just your passion for making them all make sense.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but I really like it.
I think it's great that you're just you're this nerdy numbers guy. That's fantastic. I had the opportunity to speak to John Dougal recently in the podcast. He's so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
He's fun to talk to. He emphasized that as he came into that position, he was not an accountant.
Right.
He did not have that background. So tell us why you think that this will really make you even a better prepared candidate with your background.
John Dougal is special.
He is.
You don't find men like him very frequently. And that's why when he asked me to give the nominating speech for him at the state convention when he first ran.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, back in 2012. And I was happy to do it because I knew he was different. And although he was not an accountant, he was an engineer. He had his MBA. So he had a mindset that was really needed at that time. The office was kind of a back office function at the time. And I really liked what he's done with that. Now I think that he's brought it up to the transparency focused office that it is. I think we're ready to now establish the audit function, reestablish it, re-strengthen the audit side. And to do that, you really need to have an auditor. You have to have a CPA, someone who looks through the lens of risk and control from an auditing standpoint. And that's what I've been doing for 30 years. So I think it was perfect bringing him in and transforming the office. And now I think it's best to bring in an auditor, build upon that, and make it even stronger.
That makes sense. I mean, so often in politics, we see that a person for the time and for the need and for the purpose is the right fit.
Right.
And those things change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah. And people change over time.
It's true.
So it's good to be flexible, but you have to have standards and I think bringing the audit standard, raising the audit standard in that office is the right thing right now.
How many approximately, don't mean to put you on the spot, auditors are within that department?
There are about between 45 and 50 employees in the overall department. I'd say three-fourths of them are audit focused.
Okay.
And then you have the data privacy officer was recently added there. They have a data analytics team. And then they have a local government division that's made up of auditors that are tasked to support local government and provide consistency in reporting and resources to the local governments.
Okay.
And there are a lot of local governments in Utah. You know, it's not just counties and cities. That's a couple hundred. But you talk about cemetery boards and mosquito abatement districts. There's probably close to 2,000 local governments in Utah. And most of them don't have a full-time accountant. And maybe their accountant isn't an accountant. They're a volunteer just keeping the books. They need help to make sure that they're reporting properly rather than having the auditor come in after the fact and say, hey, you did this wrong. So I think we should beef up the outreach for that office and get to them first. So we build a fence at the top of the cliff rather than an ambulance at the bottom. Let's help them get it right the first time. That's better for everybody.
That makes sense. And are you talking in terms of just being an office that will assist or an office that actually audits?
It will do both.
Involuntary audits.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, let's help them so that we don't have to
get to that point. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And the office there does a good job. It's just there's three employees and 2,000 entities. Mm-hmm. So I think we could do a better job at outreach, and I have some thoughts on that.
Do you tell us a little bit about what you think we could do better? Because as a local government, I think, we don't want the state auditor be concerned with us as a city. We want to make sure that the audits that we have conducted, third-party audits, are clean and there's zero findings or at least minimal, and that we fix them. So it doesn't get to the point that your office has to come in.
That's right.
So tell us what we can do in terms of outreach to make it a more proactive, I guess, experience.
Well, one thing is the attitude. Granted, no one likes auditors. You're not running for auditor to be the most popular kid in the world,
true.
You know? And so that conflict or that stress is actually healthy because it causes local entities to think, ooh, I don't want the auditor to come in. However, the auditor can be a fantastic partner, and I don't want to have the appearance that I'm some sword hanging over your head or we're going to come in and hammer. I want to come in as a proactive partner to help. Now, when it comes down to the facts and the audits, there's no compromise. I mean, you love people, but you stay loyal to principles. And so when we audit the numbers, we let the numbers speak for themselves. It's important that auditors are objective and independent. Outside of that, I want to have good relationships with all of the local entities. I want them to know that we're there to support them. In the end, we all want the same thing: good, clean, honest reporting, transparency, accountability. Let's work together for that. And I'd rather work with you in advance, up front, than come in behind and give a spanking, basically.
Right. At what point would the state auditor come in if the city approaches and says, hey, we have some discrepancies, or do you receive those reports and review them? I'm really not sure how the
we look at the reports after they've been done.
Okay.
But I've always encouraged cities and counties and entities to reach out in advance. And my county, we've done that at our county. Sometimes accounting isn't quite black and white, mm-hmm. and there are questions, there are estimates and judgment calls that you have to make. Give a call. It's okay to call the state auditor. That doesn't necessarily raise a red flag or anything like that.
That doesn't put you on their radar for...
Yeah, at least I don't think it should. If they're calling me as a state auditor, to me that's a good sign, a sign that they want to do it right. And to me that's a plus.
Okay, for sure. Yeah. That would be a benefit. And there are some communities within our state that are so small.
Yeah.
Even in the city, municipality,
yeah.
that you're right, the mayor's doing it all. Or the mayor / the mechanic. I mean, you know, some cities are just not set up to be able to have a big staff and
that's right.
be able to have the resources to make those things work smoothly.
And the citizens served by that jurisdiction have just as much right to have good internal controls
for
and
sure.
proper reporting. And so let's let them lean on the state auditor's office, and we'll help however we can, as long as it's appropriate, of course, but we'll help however we can.
Ricky, you've done some fantastic work with the Weber County elections.
Oh, thanks.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit, or?
Yes, state auditor's office doesn't have too much to do with
right,
elections.
But just in your current position.
Yeah, it can give a feel because I brought auditing into elections, and I think that's crucial. There's a lot of discussion about hand counting versus machine counting, and I'm not going to get into that, but I will say if you use equipment, you should audit the heck out of that equipment. And that's what we've done at Weber County for years. And I've worked at the state legislature to get that baked into laws over the past couple of years, laws that increase the requirements of auditing of election systems. So in Weber County for years, we would conduct audits before every election, during the election, and we would audit after each election before the certification process. The specific equipment. This is crucial from an auditor standpoint because you don't want to just audit in the at the beginning, and then someone comes in and changes the system, and then you don't audit after. You have to do it before and after, as well as during, to help make sure that that system hasn't been touched. And it's not just an audit of let's take the paper ballots and let's compare them to what the system did calculated. And we do that, and that's crucial. But there's another layer of auditing called hash validations. This is basically every system, the hardware, firmware, and software has basically a digital fingerprint, and that's called a hash value. And if someone were to go in to a system and change one line of code in that system or add one file to that system, that hash value changes, the fingerprint changes. And so it's a great way to make sure that your systems haven't been tampered with. For now almost 3 years, Weber County has done a hash validation both before and after each election to make sure that that system hasn't been altered. Now it's state law. We were able to get that into state law last session. And we're one of the very first states to conduct these hash validations on our tabulation system. So it's something that I'm really proud of from an auditor standpoint, to help make sure that our elections have more integrity and can be even more trusted.
I'm so glad you'd mentioned that, because I didn't understand it really at all before. So when you say that we got it into state law, are you saying that you're part of the bill-making process and the lawmaking process that sort of provided data maybe and information in order to accomplish that? That's fantastic.
Yes. For the past 8 years, I've represented the county clerks and auditors at the legislature. So I'm the legislative chair. And that involves a lot of work with the committee chairs, with legislators. We track usually about 50 to 60 bills every year, where we work with the legislators to either improve, you know, to make them good bills or maybe less bad bills.
I've heard both, right?
Yeah. And we really try to work hard with legislators. 10 years ago, our group was seen, all they do is say no. We fought just about everything. And when I took over, I wanted to flip that. I wanted to work with them up front, kind of what I was talking about earlier with local governments. I wanted to come to the legislators and say, what is it that you want? What's your end goal? And then let's work together to see if we can accomplish that. And let's talk to the experts. And we can make your life so much easier and make the bill so much better that it really works. And so that's what I've been doing both on the clerk side as well as on the auditor side.
Ricky, I think that speaks volumes to the person that people are telling me you are. We have a lot of mutual friends.
Yeah.
And that's the theme that I keep hearing, is that you're very interested in collaboration and working to get ahead of things and working to solve problems before they become problems and increasing communication and just have the ability to walk into a room and say, okay, let's fix. You know, what are your goals? These are the actual goals that we have to accomplish, and just really being able to bridge that gap.
Well, thank you. It's important to me. I'm a big believer in the 7 habits for highly effective people, and I love the principle of seek first to understand, then seek to be understood. And I think in politics, that's extremely important and often overlooked. I think it's crucial. We were working on legislation last year. It was auditor-related legislation, and it pitted the county clerks the county auditors against the county commissioners. And we were going back and forth, and we worked a lot with John Dougal. We were in his office as we were talking, and we had been negotiating for a couple of hours. And I stopped and I said, hang on, what do you mean by access, or what do you mean by access to this particular system? Because when I hear access, I think this. And they said, oh no, that's not it at all. We think this. And I said, we have no problem with that. That's great. And all those hours, if we had just stepped back and come to a common understanding, once we had that understanding, the rest was a breeze, and we worked that out. And it was significant legislation that could have really caused a rift between county elected officials, and instead it was something that we worked on together. It was great.
Ricky, I think that that's fantastic. I mean, so often, especially in media, you hear terms, and it means one thing to somebody, and it means something completely opposite to someone else. But when you have that discussion of what do you mean by that? Explain what that means to you. Like you said, you can save hours and hours and years of our lives if we just have those conversations.
That's right. And we usually realize we really just want the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly differences, political ideologies, and that's healthy. that makes us all better. And we don't have to agree with them, but we certainly can communicate. We have the right and the responsibility to communicate with them and to express our thoughts and to listen to theirs. I think that's crucial.
I do too. I appreciate you sharing that philosophy.
Yeah, thanks.
I have a question about in elections.
Yeah.
And who should be over elections in Utah? Which office? Okay. Do you have an opinion about that? I know I've heard a little bit of scuttle.
Yes. Throughout the U.S., there are several experiments, and it's great because the states are the laboratories of democracy, right? So there are a bunch of different kind of structures that run elections. Probably the most common structure is the Secretary of State. Secretary of State is an elected position. So, and again, you have a position that is running the elections on which they are a ballot. They're a candidate on the ballot. In Utah, Alaska, and a few other states, there's a lieutenant governor who runs as part of a ticket, and they are overseeing, and they're also on the ballot. So you have the same issue whether it's a Secretary of State or a lieutenant governor. Other states have boards of elections. South Carolina does, and North Carolina, Wisconsin has, and they're appointed by sometimes multiple various parties to try to make them balanced. Those work as well. They're not immune to the political influences and the partisan influences. In Wisconsin, it's kind of been a mess with their state board of elections. So there's really just not a perfect structure. I think what Lieutenant Governor Cox did 4 years ago when he was on the ballot and lieutenant governor, that's the right approach. He took a former lieutenant governor and appointed him as really the decision maker in all things related to the election. That was Gail McKechnie, I believe. And so basically he's completely stepped away from the election and had Gail McKechnie come in and be responsible for those decisions. I think that's a good way to ensure that you're stepping back and not influencing something that you're involved in.
And that's what Lieutenant Governor Henderson is doing as well, right?
Yes.
I did read that she, Lieutenant Governor Bell, is maybe going to step in and be in that role during this next election.
And in reality, the Lieutenant Governor's office doesn't run elections in Utah. They oversee. Mm-hmm. They conduct audits. They help coordinate and they train. And they help provide standards as directed by the state legislature, but they don't process a single ballot. Those are done by the county clerks, and that's an important separation of powers, a really important separation of powers to make sure that clerks are doing the actual processing, and the state elections office or lieutenant governor's office oversees and provides guidance and does some auditing.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm only privy to Davis County. Yeah. Because that's really been my experience, and I think they do a fantastic job. So
your county clerk is excellent. Brian McKenzie's among the best in the business, not just in Utah but nationwide.
Oh, really?
He's very well respected.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah,
that's good to know. They're good guys that are over there. Yeah. Ricky, as far as your experience, I know that you've testified before Congress.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, that just sounds so exciting and stressful.
Yes, I was invited in 2018. To testify before Congress, the Republican, then it was the majority, I believe, invited me to come in and present and represent the nation's clerks and the counties in a hearing about elections and elections integrity. Great. Keep in mind, this was before 2020.
This was before it all.
Yeah. So I came in, and it was because of my role with the National Association of Counties. I sit on their board of directors. They have about 40,000 members nationwide, representing, I think, 1.5 million county employees. And I'm the elections subcommittee chair for the National Association of Counties. So they contacted me, said, we'd love to have you come represent the Republicans, at the Republicans' request, represent counties. And it was a fun thing. I worked with Trey Gowdy, and it was a really, really interesting experience. I know why they call them public hearings and not public listenings, because they were there. And some of the legislators and congressmen were very attentive. Not all of them were. And that's understandable.
So you're talking to a room of somewhat engaged people.
Yes. And it was funny because when the meeting started, there were only five or six of them.
Oh, really?
And then when it came up time to a critical vote, all of a sudden there was 20. And then right after the vote, it went down to like seven.
Seven.
So it's, you know, it was interesting. And I realize I can't imagine the load that they carry up there and the schedule requirements. So I certainly can't judge them, but
it's going to be intense, but it's probably an interesting experience to realize, okay, who is actually listening and taking notes.
I was asked to testify again a second time. This was in 2021, and it was all remote. So I did it from my office, but I testified again for the Republicans, and I think the Democrats brought in Stacey Abrams to testify. Again, it was very interesting, and I was really happy to represent kind of a Republican-based, good, solid elections integrity, and look what we're doing in Utah as an example of how we can continue to improve and make our elections more secure.
Oh, I'm so proud of Utah, and proud of people like you for standing up and sharing what we're doing right here.
Thanks. We work hard. The election officials work hard in Utah. Your county auditors work hard. It's kind of a boring but important job. I really enjoy my association with my fellow auditors and fellow clerks. It's a good group. They genuinely care about getting it done right.
In terms of leadership, you've had the opportunity to serve at many levels, sounds like national board as well as state board as far as representing the county.
Yeah.
So when you first got elected, was that your vision? Okay, I'm going to eventually do all of these things, or did it just happen over time and you just bubbled up to the top?
It's a great question, because I've often thought, wow, because I had never planned first to be elected and then to get involved in the national things. I just would go to conferences and say, how can I help? And it was with no idea, no intention of ladder climbing or anything like that. But you just step in and help. These associations, you know, they're elected officials and government officials that they just want to do better. They want to learn. And I love continuous improvement. I love the idea of questioning and saying, I could be wrong. What can I do better? How can we do it cheaper or faster or better service or all three if possible? And so I would just go to these conferences and say, how can I help? And so they asked me, hey, you're an auditor. Would you sit on our audit committee? Sure. And then, oh, I see you're an election official. Would you mind presenting about how Utah does this? Yeah, you bet. And that's kind of how it went. So it almost feels accidental. But I think you just serve where you are and you offer to help. And then these things open up. I had no idea that I would become a national leader on the front of elections. I had no idea I'd be sit on a national committee that helps create governmental accounting standards for the nation. I had no idea. And again, National Association of Counties came, and they said, hey, we need someone to represent the nation's counties, the 3,000 counties, to the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. And that's the board that creates all of the national standards that state and local governments have to follow.
Boy.
And they said, we want you to represent the counties. And there were like 35 members of that board from across the country, academics, practitioners, auditors, bond rating companies, bond attorneys, just a whole slew of different, but they have only one person representing counties. And so I sit on that board. I've been on that board for 4 years. I'm on the executive committee now, again, because they asked. And it's super nerdy. We go and we meet three times a year and we talk about not just governmental accounting theory. It's like reading PhD dissertations.
And you love it, don't you?
Yeah.
You're sitting here smiling so broadly. I think that you love it. That's great.
Yeah, and we laugh at our nerdiness, but my job there is to really represent the counties, because most of the counties are small. Most counties have fewer than 50,000 people in them, like 80% of the country. And they don't have that deep expertise.
I didn't know that.
That they need. And so when these entities create these complex reporting requirements, they have to realize the ripple effect that has on these smaller counties, the impact and the additional expense, because they have to hire consultants to do the work because it's so complex. So I constantly beat the drum, and they kind of roll their eyes a little bit, because I'm like, we've got to think of the small counties. You can't put this burden solely on them. We've got to be transparent. We've got to be consistent, but we've got to be reasonable as well.
Ricky, I really like the fact that your philosophy sounds so conservative and so rational and just common sense thinking in terms of, you're right, let's make sure that we the requirement meets the needs, doesn't exceed them perhaps, and doesn't overburden them. And that's such a big, important thing that we do.
Yeah.
And those conversations really matter because they trickle down to cities and they make a huge, huge, impactful difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think most citizens realize they want government to be lean, but not sick.
Exactly.
They want you to do well, keep the potholes filled, but don't get bloated. I think citizens, they're just reasonable, regardless of your party affiliation. They're really reasonable on what they want. But government, and you know this, I'm sure, it is so much more complex than what you read about in the news. There's so much going on that you have to consider behind the scenes, and it's like, wow, it's super, super complex. And you have to always step back and say, what are the principles? What would the founders think? What's espoused in the Declaration of Independence, right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness? That's pretty fundamental. And so when you step back and, as an auditor, I say, I'm protecting your right to the pursuit of happiness, to your money. I have to protect that. I have to protect your pockets. So that's why my theme as a candidate is I'm the state's pocket protector.
I love that.
The total nerd, total focus on doing one thing, and that's protecting pockets from waste, fraud, misuse, inefficiency, government overreach. Just trying to keep those pockets protected, keep that money where it belongs, which is to the people who earned it.
Ricky, absolutely outstanding. You mentioned Cleon Skousen. I just have to, in passing, say, people ask me sometimes, why did you want to be the mayor? Why did you want to be a public service? And it's because my mom, growing up, would quote Cleon Skousen. She talked about him constantly. She loved the principles, the fundamentals. She loved the Constitution. She loves America. And that's what I grew up being taught. And I haven't heard him mentioned in many years. My mom passed 8 years ago, but it brings back so many memories.
He was such a genuine man. I remember I went to his house several times, and he'd open the door and he'd have gravy spilled on his shirt, and he'd say, "Come on in." And then he took me down to a basement. He said, "Do you want to see where I wrote all my books?" And he wrote his books in his furnace room. And I said, "Why? It's so loud in here." He said, "That's why. I couldn't hear the kids running around.
Oh.
I could focus."
That's
and
neat.
And then he espoused so many good things and such a broad range of study, from religious to governmental to raising children. I mean, it was fantastic. He was a great role model.
He really was, and my mom adored him. And anyway, yeah. It brought back some memories just having you mention him. So you are running to be our state pocket protector.
Yes, ma'am. That's
fantastic.
Right.
Fantastic. How does your wife feel about this and your family?
Oh, she is my biggest supporter.
Really?
She said, this was a couple of years ago, she said, "You need to run for state auditor." And I said, "I don't want to run for state auditor. I like what I'm doing. I like serving close to the people." She says, "Here's what you have to do. Run for state auditor, and then you need to run for governor. And then you need to become our next president, because you would be the best president."
What a sweet woman.
I know.
Sweet supporter.
She's been fantastic. And, I'm never running for president or governor. I have no intention. State auditor is just fine.
State
and then I'll retire.
Would be wonderful. How can people reach out to you? How can people support you? What can we do?
Oh, my website is rickyhatch.com. Not the most clever naming convention, but...
memorable, for sure.
Yeah.
We just need to know your name and we need to know.
That's right. My cell phone number is 801-810-7259. That's RCKY. So 801-810-RCKY.
Oh, clever. How did you get that number?
Google Voice.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
did a little
smart.
Bit of searching.
Smart.
But I wanted something that people could recognize, and that's easy. So the way I need help people talking to delegates. There are 4,000 state delegates in the state. To reach it, because I'm a nerd, as soon as I saw the number and saw the dates, I said, "How many do I have to contact every day? If I take Sundays off, because I don't want to campaign on Sundays, 89 delegates per day I'd have to contact." And there's just no way you can do that and have a meaningful conversation. I'm trying. I'm on the phone when I'm not working, and during lunch break, I'm on the phone or I'm going to events. So if you're a delegate, reach out to me, email, phone call, text. If you like what you hear, talk to other delegates, talk to your neighbors. And of course, campaigns can always use money.
For sure. For sure. That's the biggest ask, isn't it? You need money to be able to share your message. Ricky, we're so excited. Thank you for your willingness to share your message and your campaign and your experience.
Thank
on
you.
On the podcast. So people, it's rickyhatch.com.
Yes.
And 801-810-7259.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having such a good podcast and good questions and good discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricky.
To all my podcast listeners, thank you for listening. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Please leave comments and please leave suggestions for future guests. And most importantly, subscribe. Thank you.